Hello, and welcome to another episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs. I am joined by my co-host, Natalie Bellini. And today, we want to talk about an update with the GLP-1/GIP agonist, Zepbound or tirzepatide, which recently announced that they have now expanded availability. So previously they had available, and they still do, they have 2.5 and the 5 milligram dose that comes now in a vial. And why that's a big deal is because it is a much lower cost that people can purchase, even if they're paying the cash price and they don't have insurance to cover it. But what is new is that now higher doses, specifically the 7.5 and the 10 milligram doses, are also available in a vial. So Natalie, how do you think, I'm curious your thoughts on this and how you think this may impact people with overweight and obesity.
So I think this is a great thing because as we know, we see more weight loss as that dose rises. And so when they first came out with the first two or lower doses, we were all happy because there was something, but disappointed because there wasn't enough, right? There wasn't that higher. We start, you know, when I talk to patients, people with diabetes or people that have overweight in front of me, I say the magic really starts to happen at 7.5, right? We see that significant weight loss jump. And so we wanted this. We were hoping for this. So the single dose vial and 7.5 and 10 are available, $4.99 a month through Zepbound self-pay. And this is, you know, this is less than, it's approximately a third of what I see in a retail pricing. So is it still expensive, Diana? Yes, we know this, but is it dropping to, you know, some people are buying all kinds of vitamins. They're paying all kinds of stuff. They're doing all these extra things. They're buying these shakes and these smoothies and all this stuff. What if we just got you good nutrition and a little bit of Zepbound, right? And so I think that all by itself makes a huge difference for the person in front of you that most of them have stories of years and years and years of struggle with weight. This does not happen overnight. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I think it's really good. And also they announced that they're dropping the price of the 2.5 milligram to $349. And then the 5 milligram will be $499. So it's good to see that those prices are dropping as well. It still is a lot of money. I got to tell you, I worry a little bit about what I think might happen is that people will try to get the 10 milligram dose and maybe they will try to take 2.5 or 5. And so they're drawing it out of this vial and they may be trying to split doses. And I mean, there is a reason why with insulin, we've really tried to go away from vials into pens. And so I do wish that this affordable pricing came as a pen instead of a vial, but I'm still happy that at least we have a more affordable option.
We know that tirzepatide is available in other countries in a pen, in a multi-dose pen pack versus a use once in a vial that you're supposed to be using once and throwing away, right? Or recycling if you can get the top off. And so I think that, you know, this will be interesting to see how this ends up working. But I'm excited because I think that we have a lot of patients that it just five is it wasn't enough. And so to ask them to buy a 5 and a 2.5 was prohibitively expensive for the majority of the people that we see here in our practice. And this will give them another option.
Yeah, definitely. It's good to have more options. And I think that relates into the other big piece of news is just that they've declared that both semaglutide and tirzepatide are officially off of the FDA shortage list. And so what that means for compounders is they pretty much have an expiration date that they need to stop compounding. Otherwise, action can be taken against them since it's not in shortage. Now, there may be some exceptions where people can still compound if it's maybe a different type of formulation that someone needs. But overall, I think it will be pretty risky for these compounders to continue compounding. And so I'm curious what you think, how this may impact our patients, since we know a lot of people are getting compounded products just because they have been offered so much cheaper than the brand names, if someone doesn't have coverage.
Right. And I think this is going to drive a handful of different things. People are going to be there will be compounding pharmacies that decide that this isn't worth it, that they don't, you know, I mean, getting caught by the FDA doing something like this is kind of a big deal, right? The FDA is not all up in arms right now coming to pharmacies as we speak. But at some point in the future, these pharmacies have to make a decision. And so I think that there will be some that choose not to. I think that, you know, they're not supposed to be doing this as a, you know, that's the other side of it, I think, that we've kind of missed out on, is that discussion of, you know, yes, we can do it if you absolutely need it, but less than 10% of their business is supposed to be coming from these specialty type drugs like this, right? Like this, I'm making this drug that's really available, that we're doing it this way. And I think that all by itself will make it that, you know, there's advertisements now on, I mean, there was one in during the Super Bowl, right? I was shocked. So, you know, I think that some of that has to go away, because you can't be out there saying the things that you're saying. You know, we do use compounded pharmacies for other things. We, in the past, before that micro dosing of those AID pumps, we used to dilute insulin for little children, right? Like for the babies and for the toddlers. So, and we did it at compounding pharmacies. Imagine if you make insulin dosing and you make it wrong, right? So we would have the compounder do it for us, because we knew the accuracy was there in mixing insulin with a dilutant, right? Or a diluent, sorry. So there is that, like, I think that it will change, and we're going, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens, right? How many pharmacies will stop? How many pharmacies will just stop advertising but continue to do it? There's a lot of up in the air part of it. It's hard. It's going to be hard, and people are going to be upset. I hope it drives, and it has driven Lilly to drop their price, right? I mean, this is a reason that they're doing this, is that they know people are going to need to get this, because what do we know about the data is that people gain their weight back when they stop it. So that's my, as a clinician, that's my concern, is these people have become very successful. They know what they've gotten these wonderful outcomes, and now we're going to cut them off. That's a real concern.
Yeah, I could see it being a bumpy transition. Overall, I think it is important that we don't have like a million compounding pharmacies popping up and not having relationships with their patients and not even knowing if they really need to lose weight or not, and if it's safe to be losing weight. And so I think that trying to stop that is overall a positive thing. I just worry about, right, those people that have been getting it, have been doing well, and now their supply may be cut off, and trying to figure out what that is going to look like, especially people that maybe manage on these higher doses. Like if someone's on 15 milligrams of tirzepatide, so great that now there's a vial of 10, but that's not, like, what are they supposed to do? Buy a vial and a half every month? And so I think that is going to be the challenge. Like, how do we transition? I think there's going to need to be some guidance for healthcare professionals. I mean, there certainly are other drugs. There are other weight loss drugs that are not as effective, but maybe can help someone at least to maintain the weight that they've lost, and better than just going totally cold turkey on it. I would encourage people that are taking these drugs and getting them from compounding pharmacies to really start looking, talk to their healthcare team to see if they, what kind of some of these alternatives can be. And maybe we are seeing that coverage for like Wegovy and Zepbound is expanding. So it is possible someone that was getting it from a compounding pharmacy, that now their insurance could be covering it. Or maybe they have one of these other conditions like sleep apnea that now would allow them to get it, or type 2 diabetes. And so I just would encourage people to start looking, and also healthcare professionals, exactly, start talking to your patients about this, because it is coming, kind of the demise of these compounding pharmacies.
I absolutely agree with you. I think that, you know, I think we are just now seeing people start going and having their sleep apnea testing done, saying, wait, it might be covered for this though, right? It actually might, you know, it treats it and it does a really great job. So why aren't we, you know, asking people, screening for that, even in there, we screen here. Do you snore? No, I don't snore. Does your spouse think you snore? Oh yeah. Okay. Then you snore, right? And having that conversation and saying, are you willing, you know, to go get sleep apnea testing? Maybe we can get it through in a different indication.
that is legitimate, right? That you could then pick it up at your local pharmacy or get it from your mail order 3 months at a time, and it might still cost less. So I think, like you said, I think there is going to be somewhat of a bumpy transition. While we, you know, when we were suffering from the shortages of various GLP-1s, we were flipping back and forth and we were doing whatever. Guess what? We got through it, didn't we? We forget that now there isn't a shortage and how easy it is to pick the next dose and do whatever. I think we're going to be able to try to flip back and forth if we can a little bit. If we can get something else covered in the interim, it will help at least, you know, not make that weight gain happen as quickly or even bridge it so that we can maintain the weight loss until we can get what the person with obese or overweight needs.
Well, I'm going to open up a little bit of a can of worms because I have another fear with all of this. So yes, we've heard the shortage is resolved, and I believe that's true in terms of the supply. Just because there's enough supply doesn't always mean that the person can get it readily. So what I mean by that is, let's say we are going up or insurance wants us to go up because that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to go up to the next string. And it could be that the pharmacy that the person goes to doesn't have it, or it could be that the pharmacy the person goes to doesn't want to order it because they typically take a loss on these drugs. And there's also, there's incentive for pharmacies to be dispensing more generics as opposed to brand name drugs, but these are all brand name drugs. Well, I guess we've got one, liraglutide, but it's not as potent, right, as semaglutide or tirzepatide. So I do worry about that actually a little bit too, where with the compounding, at least like they were readily accessible. And now we could potentially have some issues with people being able to get the next strength or even being able to continue their current supply. So again, I just hope that this is addressed by the companies, and hopefully with the price negotiations and all that, they can make it where it is win-win for everyone, where the patient is able to afford it, the insurance plans are putting it on their formularies, and the pharmacies at least are not losing money on these products, then that would truly be a win-win-win for all.
Sorry, you know, so much to talk about. You know, I mean, the tirzepatide is such a great drug for so many people. For so many people have had such great outcomes. Semaglutide, so, you know, the CKD, you know, the all of it, right? I think we just need to, and so we want the people in front of us when we're seeing them, we want them using these medications. So it'll be an interesting next 3 to 4 months to see how this all plays out.
Definitely. All right. I want to switch gears a little bit, but it's still related. So I want to talk a little bit about tech and focusing it on, well, first I want to focus it on type 2, but what we've heard recently is that the Tandem Control IQ algorithm is now FDA approved for people with type 2 diabetes. So yeah. This is the second AID algorithm that is approved now for type 2 diabetes. We have Omnipod 5, and now we have Control IQ. And the reason why I think this is at least a little bit related to the discussion we just had about GLP analogs is that the question always comes up, well, wait, we're using these GLPs. Like, why do people with type 2 diabetes need pumps? Like, do they really still need insulin? Is this going to impact insulin? Well, I'll tell you for sure, if they get disrupted from their GLP, they're going to have probably no choice, but they are going to need insulin. But I still think that through the natural progression of type 2 diabetes that, I mean, you and I both see there's tons of patients that are on the max doses of tirzepatide or semaglutide and still do need insulin to reach their glucose goals. So yeah. I think this is an important option for patients. And I think that there are a ton of people with type 2 that are on mealtime insulin that have never even like heard of pumps for type 2 diabetes. I think there's actually a huge population that will be interested in this and could benefit from this.
Oh, I absolutely agree. There's so many, you know, when you come, you and I both work in endocrinology. So we see the people that are using GLP-1, are using SGLT2 inhibitors, are using metformin, and they still need insulin, right? So this is these people, you know, honestly, they deserve to be able to use an insulin pump. This isn't something that we should be gifting on the people that walk in the door with a crown because they happen to have type 1. This is a way to get insulin in the body That's what an insulin pump is. It's a way to get it in. So because you have type 2, you should inject? I mean, no, absolutely not. And it's interesting because we see phenomenal outcomes with AID in people with type 2. So, you know, Omnipods was approved back in August of 2024. This is really exciting. The Tandem's insulin pump holds a little bit more insulin, you know, 300 units versus 200 units. So for those people that are on high doses of insulin in spite of those other medications, or that they can't tolerate those other medications, this will help that person. It has a different algorithm. I think different people pick different algorithms for different reasons. And I think that's important to offer choice. So I do believe that we will see type 2 approval in other pumps this year, even very soon. So I'm excited. And, you know, our biggest thing is what? Medicare. Medicare does not cover durable medical equipment pumps for type 2s. And hopefully the more that are covered, the more options we'll have in getting those approved, right? So Omnipod is actually a pharmacy benefit for people with type 2 with Medicare. And so we can get someone an Omnipod insulin pump with Medicare. If the other pumps, the DME, the durable medical pumps, are not covered by Medicare if you have type 2 diabetes and you're still making insulin. So there is a little bit of a glitch there that I'm hoping long-term Medicare will relook at this and say, wow, this really is improving, increasing time in range, improving outcomes, reducing that risk of hypoglycemia, which in the end reduces hospitalizations and should be ultimately saving these people or this, you know, Medicare money.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I just want people to have the choice. I get it. Like, not everyone wants to wear something all the time. And so it's not going to be that every single person with type 2 is suddenly going to go on a pump. But I have seen over the years that many actually really appreciate it because many of the benefits we see in type 1 also happen in type 2. It just becomes so much easier to bolus, to take extra insulin if needed, if their glucose is high, or to actually, for people that are taking mealtime insulin, to get those doses in. I mean, very common scenario is a person takes their breakfast dose and skips lunch because they're out and they don't have their insulin pen with them, or it's inconvenient. They don't want to have to leave to inject, leave somewhere. And then maybe if they remember, they'll take their dinner. And so it becomes really challenging to reach those goals. And I think a lot of people are going to really appreciate that now this can be an option for them. I do think we are going to have to hone in on some misconceptions about pumps. When I bring it up to some people, they're like, well, wait, isn't that for the bad kind of diabetes or severe right. diabetes? And I think we have to change that message, that's not what it's for. It is just a way to deliver insulin, and often it is much more convenient. And now with all of the automation in the systems, it also just helps to reach to goal, to give these more precise doses to get to goal more quickly. And then going on specifically about Control-IQ, because there are these auto boluses every hour for the person that doesn't remember to bolus, it really can get them into range more quickly. And the fact that when using the t-slim X2, that does hold 300 units, and we know that higher, you know, people with type 2 often do need higher doses of insulin. So all that to say is I am excited about the choices to offer more people with type 2 diabetes.
I think, too, we have to remember the other side of it, right? I think hypoglycemia is a true fear for a lot of people, especially when we see someone with type 2 diabetes, when we initially, you know, they remember being an A1C of 10 or 11 or whatever, 1.9 at diagnosis. And we, you know, worked with them, but eventually need to use insulin, and they may have had a low or felt like they were having a low, even if their blood glucose wasn't as low. We wouldn't consider it a medical diagnosis of a low, and they felt awful. And we can use these AID systems too, you know, depending on their age. We don't have to set all goals at 100 or 110, right? We can make them, we can relax the goals a little bit. We can say things like, we want you exercising. You know, what exercise should be a fundamental part of type 2 and type 1 diabetes. And people are afraid to exercise. They're afraid of the low glucoses. So this helps reduce those by just being able to take the insulin away, that background insulin away. And finally, my other big part about this is I think the words AID, automated insulin delivery, scares everybody who isn't computer savvy. Oh my gosh, what is it doing? I don't know. I think we need to remember that we can make these systems be very simple. We do it all the time in clinical practice, right? I tell somebody, small meal, put in 25, medium-sized meal, put in 50, large meal, put in 75. If you go out to dinner, put in 90, right? Like make it super easy like that. And then I can change the carb ratios in the background. And they always put in 25 for a small. They always put in 50 for a medium. I can write that out in insulin directions. And they may get more or less at different meals based on what I've done in the background of the pump for them. So we don't have to make this difficult. And I think people think that someone should be able to count, is this 18 grams? Is this 23 grams? I'm like, look, if it's a small meal, you need this, you know? So I think we also need to rethink how we teach insulin pumps and how we teach it even to a lot of the people with type 1. I mean, if you looked at my pump data, everything I eat is 22 grams, but it's not. But it's like where I start, right? I'm like, it's 22. And then I take a bite. And if it's sweet, I might add more or take away. Oh, no, it probably what, you know. But it's like we all do that because most of the food that we eat should not come in a package. So, you know, that is a big part of it, too. You want people eating real fruit and real apples and real things that are guessing. So
wait, you mean people aren't carrying their scales with them and weighing all of these foods to calculate their carbs?
I had someone suggest I do that. I was like, I'll get right on that. Thank you. Right. So I think we have to think about what real life is with diabetes. And I think that this is going to help. And I do believe that we're going to offer really excellent different education as we use automated insulin delivery systems in these people with type 2. I'm super excited.
Me too. I really am excited to have more options for everyone. So awesome. All right. Well, this has been an amazing discussion. Hope everyone listening or watching found it interesting. That wraps up this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives.